Hello, this is Sam Point on.
Hey, Merrick.
Hey, Rudy.
Hey, this is Russ Hazlett with Coast Guard in Anchorage.
All right, good to have you, Russ.
Hey, Russ.
Good morning, this is Rachel Wellman and Alana McGovern with Coast Guard in Juneau.
Hi, Rachel.
Chris Priestess with NIMS Enforcement in Kodiak. Good morning.
Hey, Brent, how you doing?
Good. Glenn Campbell with the Observer Program in Seattle.
Hey, Glenn.
Luke Szymanski and Rochelle Barranco with AIS in Seattle.
Hey, Luke.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Good morning. It's Mark Stickert and Trent Artill with Fish and Game in Kodiak.
Hey, Mark. Stan, you have any fishermen there in Sandpoint?
No, I'll get a house full. I get Dave Jacobson, Ben Movac, and Douglas Holmberg, myself.
Sure.
But we're expecting more coming here. We're going to put you on mute for a while.
Yeah, okay. We've got three fishermen here as well. They can introduce themselves if they want. And we may record this meeting and post it later on if that's agreeable to anybody.
How you doing?
Good.
Good.
But it is a...
Art. How are you doing?
Are you ready to record, Lynn?
I am.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll get started. Again, this is Ernie Weiss, Solutions East Borough, here in the Anchorage office. I sure appreciate your help setting this up, Brent, and everybody's participation, including fishermen and asking questions of what's going on. It sounds like we've got Sandpoint. I don't know about King Cobra False Pass, but people in Juneau and Anchorage and Seattle.
Hi, and this is Cindy Godsey with EPA in the Seattle office.
Oh, great. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
So I guess, Brent, I'm going to maybe turn it over to you, and we might go on mute as well, and maybe everybody who's not asking questions or presenting might do that, facilitate a better teleconference. So, Brent, I'm going to turn to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, for attending. We've done this for quite a while, and I think this is a really great thing, and I think I am just going to go down... the list here and turn it over. Maybe I will start with a couple of things that I have to add this year. The big one is that the federal fisheries permits are renewed on a three-year cycle, and that cycle begins again January 1st, 2015. So no matter when you got your last federal fisheries permit, it will come up for renewal on January 1st. Most everyone who has one was sent a renewal notice. I realize that sometimes those get lost in the mail shuffle, but I wanted to remind everyone of that. And then also, if those are required for anyone who fishes for groundfish in federal waters or anyone who fishes for halibut in federal waters, and with changes to the LLP program and observers, if you do not fish in federal waters, you probably do not want a federal fisheries permit. I won't go into all the particulars here, but I would encourage you to call my office in Kodiak. Any of us here can walk you through the particulars of your situation. But if you do not need a federal fisheries permit, you could, if you do get one, you could wind up having some additional requirements that may not be otherwise necessary. So if you're unsure about that, please give our office a call. And I find that everyone's situation is a little bit different. So rather than going to all the possible combinations here, again, please just give us a call. The other thing that is coming up, and I think NIMS Sustainable Fisheries will be on the line to talk about it, is the the stellar sea lion restrictions in the Aleutian Islands are opening up. I don't know, even know if that applies to you guys. Is there anyone who trawls in federal waters out in the Aleutian Islands for, say, the Adak peacod or out there?
There's some boats that got LLPs, but they don't.
Brent, the last reason SS is on, if you want us to talk about the stellar sea lion rule.
Okay, maybe Mary, I will come back. Put you in the queue. It doesn't sound like there's many fishermen, at least trawling out there. So I won't go into my stuff about it. But yes, I will ask you to talk about it a little later on, Mary. In fact, why don't you go ahead and talk about it now.
Okay, this is Josh in the Alaska region. Brent, I do know that there are some boats that do go out and fish peacod in the Aleutians, and so it is good for everybody to know that there has been reductions in the restrictions of area for being able to prosecute that peacod fishery. There's a small entity compliance guide posted on the website that has good maps for people if they're interested to look at that. And the key thing, the key change as for, you know, preparing to, if you do that, is that there is a new requirement that your VMS is going to pull at, it has to be set to pull at 10 per hour instead of the 2 per hour. So if you're planning on going to the Aleutian Islands to trawl, you're going to have to call your VMS vendor and make sure that your VMS can pull at 10 per hour. Other than that, it's a little hard for us to discuss all the changes in the spatial areas that are open and stuff like that. So I would direct you guys to the Small Entity Compliance Guide and the maps provided there. There's some good write-ups. And the other thing is as if you remember last year, Aleutian Islands now has its own cod tack. And so that cod fishery is likely to close earlier in the year, as it did this last year. So if you're planning on doing that, you know, do it before March. So that's about all I have.
I was kind of curious, this Dick Jacobson standpoint, why would you make that change at 10 per hour instead of 2 per hour on the VMS? Picking and setting the gear takes you well over an hour. I mean, you're not going to be restricted by monitoring where the vessels are by to an hour.
So the VMS change is specific to trawl vessels only that have a federal fishing permit, fish in federal waters of the Aleutian Islands. And the reason is that there's some very complex spatial closure areas because of the Aleutian Islands Habitat Conservation Area. That's all the little blocks that allow you to fish in the Aleutian Islands. And with the stellar sea lion restrictions on top of that, there's some small areas that it was determined in the analysis that a vessel could transit at a trawling speed through a closed area and not be detected. So this is an enforcement tool. VMS is an enforcement tool for that. And so that's why that change was made.
Okay, thank you. Kind of, like I said, immaterial because it takes so long to set your gear and pick it. But okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Josh?
I was just kind of curious. There's a posting out from the Alaska Intertribal Council about making the whole Aleutians into a marine sanctuary, 490-some-thousand square miles. You guys weighing in on that in any way, shape, or form?
This is Sally Bibb in the Alaska region, and I guess I'm not even aware of that proposal, but that is a sanctuary-related proposal, so it would not be handled directly by our office, but at some point, if it moves forward in the review process, I'm sure we would be asked to provide input or information about that, but right now, I'm not aware of it, and I don't think anybody who's here in this room is actually working on it, but I guess I'm glad to hear about it. It's something for us to find out about and just track.
Thank you. I'd encourage you to weigh in on it in opposition of it. I mean, they never even took into consideration the people out here and never even consulted with the people out here before it was submitted. So thank you.
Anything else then for Josh or Sally or Mary? Okay, how about Glenn Campbell with the NIMS Observer program in Seattle? Glenn?
Yeah, thanks, Brent. So I'm just going to quickly cover what's new in 2015 in regards to those vessels who were moved from the what we call the vessel selection pool to now trip selection. So this impacts any vessel between 40 and 57 feet. So if you remember the last 2 years, NIMS, we would decide who would take an observer for a two-month period. But due to council motions and council directions, that is no longer applicable. So what will happen for those boats is just like the large boats, you're going to go in and log your individual trips. And so what we did in late October is we identified all the vessels who would fall under the new trip selection program, and we sent you letters to the owners of the vessels. So if your vessel is between 40 and 57, you should have received a letter from us explaining the new program, how to log your trips, how observer coverage works, a little bit about AIS and their background and how to contact them. A couple highlights is simply about the program, just so you're aware. What will happen is that if you fall into this group, you're going to need to log each applicable fishing trip. You can log up to 3 trips at a time. You should try to log your trips at least 72 hours in advance. The reason we ask for this is that if a trip gets picked for coverage, then AIS has the needs the logistical time to provide you your observer and get that to you. AIS has been doing this for a couple years now. They've gotten really good at it. So if you do get picked for coverage, you'll just call them and talk with them and work with them in getting your observer. For the small boats between 40 and 57 feet, we're selecting at a 12% rate. The program doesn't look at if you were selected the trip before, what's happened throughout the year. It just simply evaluates each trip. So each time you log a trip, that trip has a 12% chance of getting selected for observer coverage. So if you do not get picked for observer coverage, you just go out on your trip, come back from your trip, you would go back into the system and close it out. There's two ways that you're going to access the system. You can either access it online, or you can call AIS, and they have a data call center, and they have operators that work, I think, about 12 to 18 hours a day. I don't remember the exact hours, but pretty much they're always there, and you can call them, and they can access the system for you, and then they can log your trips, close your trips out, and stuff like that. We do monitor the system to make sure that people are appropriately logging the trips, and if there's discrepancies, OLE will reach out to those impacted parties and either do education or they'll follow their process. So everything is detailed in the letter. If you've got questions or issues, you can either call AIS or let me give you an email address that we use for technical issues, account issues. That email address is odds.help@noaa.gov. I'm not going to go into too much of the specific details, but it's all pretty self-explanatory if you're on the website or if you need to call AIS. So, Brent, I'll take questions or what people want to do.
And Glenn, I've sort of recommended to folks, if you're new to the odds system, is maybe talk with someone who's used it the past year, because there are ways to make it work for you, and rather than go into all the different combinations, I suggested that you talk with somebody who's done it and sort of figure out the trips. I don't normally recommend that as an enforcement guide, but I think for odds, that's probably a good strategy.
Oh, no, I think that's a great idea, Brent. I think for those people who have not used the odds system before, is talk to your other peers who own a vessel that's have been logging trips for the last 2 years, and they'll be able to explain how it works, and they'll be able to explain it to you really quick and the different ways to log your trips and access the system. And like I said, our goal is to make it as transparent as possible, as user-friendly as possible. That's and so if you have any questions, any issues, you can use that odds.help@noaa.gov, or you can call AIS and we'll work with you to get your trips logged and get your observer coverage. Typically, a couple of the things that people have in the back of their mind who haven't done this is, you know, some of the normal questions, the fears that we get from the fleet is that if AIS can't get me an observer, am I going to be stuck at the dock? No, we will never keep you from going fishing. And so our goal is not to impact your ability to go fish or anything like that. So we always work with each owner, each captain, to make sure that we can keep you on the fishing grounds and not keep you at the dock.
And rather than take questions now, I think I will introduce Luke and Rochelle from AIS, and because obviously they are the key part of the observer, getting your observer. And so once they are done, then we can open it up to any observer coverage type questions. So Luke.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brent. As you mentioned, I am here with Rochelle Barranca. Unfortunately, Jason Dean, who is the Anchorage Area Field Coordinator and typically handles the deployments of observers throughout the Aleutians and the Alaska and Kenai Peninsulas, he wasn't available to participate in the call. So I apologize for that. I would like to mention or reiterate, as Glenn stated, we are handling the data call center, so folks that don't log into odds to log their trips can give us a call. The number for that is 855-747-6377, and that number is on the letter that was sent out. Additionally, I'd like to provide a alternative number in the event that you can't get through to us on that. I know early last year, folks calling in from Sandpoint often had trouble getting through to that number. Throughout the year, my staff has continued to test that, and I would say probably around 70 to 75% of the time, the calls from Sandpoint do go through to that call center. However, you know, early on in January, once we provided an alternative number, I think a lot of folks just went ahead and started using that alternative number. Unfortunately, that's Jason Dean's direct cell phone number, and he's not always at a computer where he's able to log trips. So this number I'm going to give out is 206-673-3338. That number will go directly to the appropriate person. Certainly, if you have deployment issues, anything you want to discuss with Jason, feel free to call him on his cell phone, his direct number. That's fine. But if you are experiencing problems with the toll-free number, if you could call that 206 number that I provided. And again, that's 206-673-3338. And you know, as one final number, if those don't work and you're still experiencing trouble, I'd really like to hear about it so we can try to solve the problem quickly. My direct number is 774-265-0596. Yeah, that's really all that I've got. And the call center hours are from 6 a.m. Alaska time to 10 p.m. Alaska time.
Okay, any questions then for Luke or Glenn?
Yes, this is False Pass, Tom Hobbit from False Pass. I was wondering about the trip selections. Say if we logged a trip when it opened the first of the year and we went out and didn't come back in until the end of the season, until the federal season, and we were unloaded to a tender. But if we had to come in, would we have to log again if we came in for some unknown reason to the dock?
Yeah, so this is Glenn down in Seattle. So there's two definitions of a trip, when a trip begins and when a trip ends. So the first definition is pretty straightforward. If you're just delivering to a shoreside processor, it's the date and time you leave the dock, the date and time you get back to the dock to offload to that processor, and all your fish have been offloaded. So that's when it begins and ends. So the question you're asking is about what we call a tender delivery. And that's a second definition, so that's a tender trip. So let's say you're going to leave the 1st of January. And let's say, I'm just going to throw out a date. Let's say that it's possible that the season goes through the middle of February, so 2/15. So that's what you would actually log your trip for, is you would say, I'm leaving on the 1st and coming back on the 15th of February. Because your thought is that the whole time you're going to be delivering to a tender. Does that make sense? And so your trip doesn't end until you actually get back to a dock and you've had at least one tender delivery. So let's say in this case you go out and you deliver to a bunch of tenders and you do get back to the dock on the 15th, so that's your one trip. So you would have logged that trip. Now let's say that that something, like you said, unexpected happens. Let's say you're out there for 2 weeks. You've made a tender delivery a couple times throughout those 2 weeks, but you do have to go back to the dock for whatever reason, fuel, backload, whatever. Once you get back to the dock, then you've got to go in and update your trip that the trip ended. So you can change it from 2:15 to 1:15, for example. And then you would log another trip based off of the day you're leaving and the anticipated date that you get back to the dock. So that's really important for a number of you guys who do offload to tenders. It's not that your trip doesn't end when you offload to the tender. It ends when you finally get back to the dock. So it could be a 30-day trip, 45-day trip, whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, and I think I'll make a note to myself right now to open it up for general questions at the end. So if somebody thinks of something that we've already gone past, we can circle back to it at the end. Cindy, from the EPA in Seattle, I'll turn the line over to you.
Okay, well, I wish I had some news. There is a moratorium that's been presented as part of the Coast Guard funding bill, and it's a three-year moratorium on the vessel general permit, and it went to the president last Friday, but it hasn't been signed yet, so it's not law. So the moratorium that is in place now ends today. And so the small vessel general permit would come into effect tomorrow unless this bill is signed by the president and becomes law before then. And so the small vessel general permit has a lesser application process than the large vessel general permit. It's basically a the notice of intent is a form that you download from the permit, and you don't have to submit it. You just have to fill it out and sign it, and then keep track of the quarterly inspections that are required by the permit. And then the only reporting that is required under the permit is a non-compliance reporting. So if you don't have a non-compliance, then you aren't subject to reporting anything. And then for the application, it's good for one vessel for a full 5 years of coverage under the permit. So I'm not sure what else anybody wants me to talk about, but are there any questions? I'm hoping the moratorium gets signed. It would just make life a lot easier for everybody.
Ask them maybe if they're
Cindy, do you have that. Is there an EPA website that we could give out that has the particulars on this?
Oh, definitely. Basically, when I want to get to it, I just Google vessel general permit, and it's usually the first or second one on the thing. And if you go into the large vessel general permit, if you get into there, over on the right-hand side, there's a link to the small vessel general permit. But I will find that website and send it to whoever I got the meeting invitation from lately.
Sure, Brent, this is Ernie. Yeah, Cindy, I had a direct link to the permits on my website, aebfish.org. I took them down, figuring this was all a done deal, but I'll go ahead and put those back up there as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the bill history on the internet right now, and it says it's at the president's desk, but you know it hasn't clicked over to became law yet.
So there is a question here, if you don't mind. Somebody asked. I guess I'm assuming if you're going to go out with your vessel, you need to go ahead and get that permit and take it on your vessel right away.
Tomorrow would be the permit goes into effect tomorrow. So unless this moratorium gets signed today, then you should go online, get the notice form. It's called a PERI, and it stands for something, but I can't remember what it stands for right now. Fill it out, and basically I think that the only thing that you have to do at the beginning is fill it out. And sign it, and then you'd be subject to quarterly inspections thereafter. But to get coverage under the permit, you need to fill that form out, and then just keep it on board, or you know, somewhere wherever you keep your paperwork.
Because you know they're going to board you.
Any other questions?
And comply with the permit. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, not only have the permit, but comply with it.
Any other questions for Cindy?
I hope she signs. I mean, he signs it.
Anybody poking the president?
Okay, Russ Hazlett, the Coast Guard, do you have anything for the group?
Hey, how are y'all doing? The big thing that I just want to bring up with this new observer way of doing this is probably going to, if someone's decal isn't up to date, are they going to be able to, if we can't get out to Sandpoint or King Cove or wherever these people are in a timely manner, are they going to be able to go out and fish as well? That's the big question I have.
As a Coast Guard guy, that's your question?
I think we would look at that on a case-by-case basis, but our expectation is that King Cove, Sandpoint, that's a remote area. We want to see that, we would want to see that a boat has done everything that they could to get a safety decal. And Glenn can correct me if I'm wrong, but the observers will not deploy to a vessel that does not have a current safety decal. That is, direction from the observer program to the observers. They do not have a choice. And so if a vessel was required to take an observer and didn't have a safety decal, the issue would probably get turned over to enforcement pretty quickly.
That's correct, Brent. So if a boat is selected for observer coverage, one of the first things the observers does during boarding is the safety orientation, and one of the things they look at is the presence of the safety decal, and to make sure the safety decal is not expired. And if it's missing or expired, that's what we call a no-go item. And no-go meaning the observer will not sail. And then they will report that to AIS, and AIS will report it to us, and we'll report that to enforcement. And like Brent said, he'll take it on a case-by-case basis with each boat.
Okay, great. And we are doing everything we can to get out there. And I have Petty Officer Brinkley and Petty Officer Simpson going out to Sandpoint. They'll be there January 7th through the 9th, tentatively. We're trying to get out to King Cove, but we're having a hard time getting flights and stuff like that. We're right now trying to get out there via the Air National Guard on one of their flights. So we're doing everything we can to get out there. I know there's several fishermen out there that stickers will be going out of date in January. So the best thing that I can say is we will have two people out there in Sandpoint the 7th through the 9th right now. So if you need a sticker, get with the Harbor Master. Then we are also going to plan to be out there the third week of May is what we're planning right now. So if you don't need one immediately, be sure to try to get one in May when we come out. We're going to try to make the third week of May our annual visit to Sandpoint, King Cove area. And other than that, it's going to be get to Dutch Harbor or Kodiak or something like that. So any questions for us?
Sure. Ernie Weiss here. I've had this question in the past. It seems like there's a Coast Guard presence anyway in Cold Bay most of the time, and people have asked, well, couldn't we utilize that?
Well, we're trying the best that we can. I tried to get out there via the air station's aircraft, the Coast Guard's aircraft. It's a very hard thing to do. We from Anchorage would have to get over to Kodiak and then wait on the aircraft to whether they go or don't go. And then we're basically flying on the air station's schedule. And so it's easier for us to just buy a plane ticket and come in on the plane ticket commercially than to fly on the air station schedule. As bad as that sounds, that's the reality of it.
Okay, thank you.
Just a comment, you know, the season opens on the 1st, and if your permit is not Kurt, that if the canneries start buying, that's a week of fishing. That could be probably over 30-40% of your season, depending on whether the fish are available or not.
Are you talking on us getting out there before the 7th through the 9th?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
That was the first we could get a get plane tickets out there. The planes are all booked up all the way until the 7th.
Well, and this would also be this the safety decal is not required unless you get chosen for observer coverage. So if you do not have the safety decal, yes, you're sort of rolling the dice, but the odds are, especially for that first 7-day period, that you're probably not going to get chosen for observer coverage. But again, our expectation is that
how are they going to get observers?
Yes, everyone take advantage of getting this.
That's up to the owner and skippers to have that. They were there in September, so.
But you know, it does require some planning ahead, and that's going to be our expectation for it.
Any other questions for us?
Okay. Hearing none. The Coast Guard 17th District in Juneau is also on the line. Did you have anything for the group?
Hey there, Brent. It's Rachel Wellman in Juneau. Not really much to add. I did want to kind of expand on the decal thing that will be mandatory coming up in October of 15. So that's really when you're going to need to make sure that your vessels all have those. They're good for 2 years. And then again, when you get selected for an observer, obviously at that point it would be required. So if you don't have one and you aren't selected for an observer, you do have a little bit of time, and you can work with the guys out there to see when they're going to be in your area and get your vessel covered. Yeah. That's really all I have.
That's good to know.
Okay, any questions?
Yes, this is Luke Smansky with AIS in Seattle again. I'd be really interested to hear from the any vessel representatives in Sandpoint, King Cove, False Pass, or elsewhere on when or what level of effort we can expect following Christmas through to the first couple of weeks of January. I had heard that the plant in King Cove is probably not going to take fish until after the 5th. But I'd be interested in hearing from you guys on what the effort we could be looking for.
I would assume that with the economy and with the salmon season the way it was, that everybody that's capable of going fishing is going to probably go as soon as they can. The economy out here is in a bad situation right now, so I think everybody's going to try. And if the plant is going to process on the 5th, you can start on the 3rd and have fish ready to deliver when the plant is ready to take them.
Hey, Luke, this is Josh in the Alaska region. If we can probably give you some help on that, so if you want to give us a call afterwards, or Mary or myself or Obi, we'd be more than willing to talk to you about what our expected levels of effort might be.
Yeah, that sounds great, Josh. I've got you on the top of my list to call today, so I'll give you a call in a little bit. Thank you.
All right, sounds good.
Ask them if they have reservations to get people to Sandpoint, if anybody gets selected on the verse.
Okay, how about Mark with Fish and Game?
Yeah, thanks, Brent. Good morning. So just very quickly, there are three separate state-managed cod fisheries in the region that folks online might be interested in. There's the Aleutian Islands District near Adak, the newly created Dutch Harbor Sub-District state-managed fishery, and then the South Peninsula fishery. For all three of those areas, there were no changes in any regulations, so we expect those fisheries to be relatively status quo for 2015, consistent with this year. Now that the council has adopted the harvest specifications for next year, we'll be putting out our fishery manager plans, which just kind of runs down all the regulations. We chose three fisheries. We'll work with the borough to get those distributed as soon as they're ready. Should be in the next couple weeks. Again, just as a quick reminder, all three of those fisheries are in cycle for Board of Fisheries review in spring of 2016. So if anyone wants to submit a proposal to the board to make changes to any of the state regulations for those fisheries, those proposals will be due this April 10th. And as always, we're available for any assistance or questions in that process. And I'll take questions. Thank you.
Wow. No questions.
Here. Here, now I'm going.
Mark, it's Taylor. Are you on here?
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
That's your question.
Good. What's the GHL for this year?
In the peninsula, it's 25.59 million pounds total, and it breaks down to 21.75 for pot and 3.84 for jigs, so up about 3.5 million pounds.
Awesome. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think that's all the questions. Dan, is there anyone else from the who I've forgotten or who would like to pass something to the group?
Hey,
what's going on with Crab?
I think this is Mark and Kodiak. I think that's for me. You know, it's a pretty diverse crowd. Maybe you ought to give me a call so we can talk crab. I don't think it's really relevant to this group, but very generally, still lots of small crab on the ground, probably a year or two out before we see them hit a fishery.
Hey, Brent, this is Mary with Sustainable Fisheries.
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
So we'd want to go over a few of the regulations that will be coming in place this year. And one of them, especially for the Gulf, is that we'll have Chinook salmon PSC limits for the non-pollock trawl fisheries. And so that's a Gulf, our Western and Central Gulf limit for the non rockfish program Central Gulf participants for trawl catcher vessels, and that limit is 2,700 Chinook salmon, and we'll have a report on the web that shows the weekly catch of that Chinook salmon against that limit. And then also later on in the year, we don't have a date, an effective date yet, but grenadiers will be a species that's moving into the fishery management plan for the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea Aleutian Islands, and you'll be required to report your catch and discard the grenadiers. And then we have a few other regulations, some of the IFQ regulations.
Okay, is that what you want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, this is Rachel Baker with the Alaska Region Sustainable Fisheries. And we did have a few regulatory revisions to the IFQ program this year. The first one, and they really both had to have to do with the hired master provisions of the IFQ program. The first regulatory change would actually prohibit quota shareholders to use a hired master for IFQ that's derived from catcher vessel quota share that was received by transfer after February 12, 2010. And so what that means is when we issue IFQ permits for the 2015 fishing season, they will designate whether that IFQ can be fished by a hired master or not. And so if the IFQ comes from
from quota share received after February 12, 2010, you cannot use a hired master to fish that IFQ. And then sort of accompanying that regulation change a little bit earlier this year, we published a regulatory change that will also be effective for the 2015 season that tightens up the vessel ownership requirements for quota share holders that do continue to use hired masters. For a long time, we've had the 20% vessel ownership requirement, but this new regulation requires that the quota share holder owns 20% of the vessel for the previous 12 months, and that will be effective for the 2015 season. So when you submit your hired master application, you'll have to submit documentation that you've owned 20% of the vessel that will be used to fish the IFQ for the previous 12 months. So are there any questions about either one of those regulatory changes? Okay, and then so related to the IFQ program, we also had a couple of regulatory revisions that amended the community quota entity program. And the first one essentially removed a prohibition on CQEs holding small blocks of quota share. And that was effective just earlier this month. And so essentially now community quota entities will be able to purchase small blocks of quota share below that minimum block size. And also
I'm sorry, I'll wait until you're done. I have to go back a ways for a question, sorry.
Oh, okay. And then also somewhat related, we also implemented this year a community quota entity program for the Aleutian Islands. The community of ADAC is eligible to form a community quota entity and purchase and hold quota share for use similar to the Gulf of Alaska community quota entity program. And also as part of that same action, we also implemented a regulatory change that would revise IFQ program regulations to allow IFQ quota share in Area 4B to be fished on Category C vessels. So basically a fish up provision in Area 4B was added this year as well. So let's see, there was just kind of, we had a number of regulations passed this year, so just kind of moving along through the list. We also implemented, well, effective January 1st, 2015, we're also implementing a Gulf Trawl Economic Data Report program. And this will require owners of trawl catcher vessels, trawl catcher processors, and shoreside processors to submit economic data reports to NIMS, basically labor costs and revenue information. The owners of the trawl catcher vessels and catcher processors and shoreside processors are required by this rule to begin collecting that information or compiling that information January 1st, 2015, and then the economic data report will be due, the first one will be due by June 1st, 2016, and every June thereafter they'll be due. So we have forms on our website, and those forms list the information that will be required to be submitted.
So is that a logbook we need to start keeping, or just a record, or?
Yeah. Right, it's records, essentially, you know, invoices and things like that. And if you, I'd be happy to forward the forms to somebody so you could see what information is required in terms of the cost data that you'll be required to submit.
You'll have to fill it out.
Yeah. Do you want me to give you my email now? This is Taylor Lundgren in Sandpoint.
Sure, yeah.
And we can also just send this to Ernie and he can post it on his website too.
That'd be fine too. And I can download it off there or whatever.
send it to you.
Who's this, Mary?
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Yep.
Mary. I think she did the... Wasn't that the person you guys hired or no?
Can I ask that other question now?
Who are you?
Kylie Thompson from Sandpoint. I think the question is probably for Brent. The Chinook bycatch, the non-pollock Chinook bycatch, how is that, what's the retention? I mean, on pollock, we're required to retain Chinook. Are we, is it the same for bottom trawl now, or how?
Mary may know this off the top of my head. To be honest, I am not certain. Mary, do you know?
Right, there is a full retention requirement on that Chinook salmon for the non-trawl. I mean, the non-pollock trawl catch rather.
So we're required to retain
pollock.
Salmon, okay?
And pollock too, right?
Yeah, so it's the same as pollock, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then, how is it? I don't even know how to ask the question, but how is it extrapolated? Just basket samples, whole haul? How? Because I mean, yeah, you know, out here they don't buy flats and stuff like that, so we have a lot of stuff going over the side. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, make sure we're playing by the rules.
Yeah, this is Jennifer Mondragon with the Alaska Region, and the data that we use to monitor the CAP is the observer data, so both in the pollock fishery and in the non-pollock fishery. So that will be extrapolated from observed trips, and so the pollock is, and during the pollock fishery, the observers will do sampling at the plant. But in the non-pollock fishery, it'll be based on sampling that the observers do at sea, and all of that is based on observed trips. But the processors are also required to report the salmon on the fish tickets, so that's another source of information, a secondary source of information from that full retention requirement is on the fish tickets.
I guess my question is, so the data you're going to turn into the hard number, knowing how far we're moving along on this cap, is going to be basket samples. It's not going to be whole haul samples?
Correct. In the non-pollock fishery, it'll be basket samples.
Okay. Gotcha.
And it's going to be extrapolated?
Well,
extrapolated.
Yes, it'll be extrapolated, so it'll be basket samples on observed trips. That's extrapolated to the unobserved trips.
Sweet.
Do you have any volunteer video vessels out here so you can compare the data on a video sample versus an observer sample?
You mean with electronic monitoring?
Yes, you know, camera monitoring of a trip.
Right now, with the electronic monitoring program, we don't have any volunteer vessels, trawl voluntary vessels. The electronic monitoring priority right now from the council is on the small vessel hook and line fleet. So we're not actively working on a trawl program at this time.
Why?
Okay, we have.
There is one. I just have one thing to mention. I'm sorry. Because this, with the bottom Chinook, you know, and sorting at sea, and it seems to get a little muddy on the getting the right number. And there is one vessel in the trawl fleet out here that has an EM system aboard, but I don't know if you guys would be interested in getting in touch with him or, you know. I don't know how that works, but we do have one vessel that's equipped.
And who is that?
Yeah, I think that is. And are they working through, like, working on a particular research project?
He he kind of put it aboard because we were trying to get a grant last year to put some get three vessels.
Okay.
Equipped. The grant fell through, but he put it aboard himself anyway. He did. I know he did fish with it last winter. For salt water was running the program. I mean, if you contacted saltwater observers, I know he still has the system, and I know he wants to, you know, somebody to use some data off of it. So it would be a good way to get that started, I think.
And that's good information. I have heard about that project. We have the council now has an electronic monitoring work group, and that's really kind of been the forum for people to communicate about work that they're doing, and I have heard about that project. So I think that information is being conveyed to the EM work group as far as one of the ongoing, more industry-led research projects that is happening around the state. So I am aware of that, but thank you for the information.
We have a few more regulations we wanted to let you know about.
Just quickly, we removed the requirement for marker buoys to have the vessel name on it, so now the regulations require an identification number, which is either an ADF&G number or a federal fisheries permit number. And we also made some changes allowing the use of a copy of the federal fisheries permit on board the vessel. We used to require that it was the original be maintained on the boat, so now it's okay to use a copy of the permit.
And I forgot one. This is Rachel again. I'm sorry. I forgot a regulation. We also, in 2014, implemented some congressional revisions to the American Fisheries Act to essentially allow the owner of an AFA vessel to rebuild or replace the vessel without any limitation on the length, weight, or horsepower. And that... Yeah, and when it's used in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands, and the rule also would allow the owner of the catcher vessel in an inshore cooperative to remove the vessel from the cooperative and assign the Bering Sea pollock catch history of the removed vessel to one or more vessels in the cooperative. So I'm not sure if that's relevant to anyone on the call, but that was also a regulatory amendment we implemented this year.
And then we're just going to give you an update on the pollock federal quotas for the Gulf federal quotas for pollock and cod.
Yeah, this is Oberyn Davis, also here in the Alaska region. As far as pollock in the Western Gulf this year, there was a downtick. I think last year's tack was a little over 36,000 metric tons, and this year it's coming in a little under 32,000. And I think pollock's doing generally pretty well in the Gulf, and overall in total it's going up, but the way they redid the area apportionments this year, area 610 went down and area 620 and 630 went up as far as pollock goes. And with cod went up again. We've got figures, I don't have them in pounds, I just all got my sheet with metric tons on them. A couple ones I'll highlight is trawl catcher vessels. The 2015 cod apportionment is going to be a little over 10,000 tons. The pod allocation is a little over 9,900 tons. And the last one I wanted to note is the jig allocation is going to be 948 metric tons. One thing to note there is that when we did the Pacific cod sector splits in the Gulf a couple of years ago, there was a provision that the jig allocations come off of the area tax in the Western and Central GOA, and there's a stair-step provision where the jig apportionments can go up based on performance. Jig sector's been doing well in the Western Gulf, so for 2015, we're going to bump up their percentage another point, so the jig sector is going to get 3.5% of the overall tack. That comes off the top of the Western GOA tack before we do the rest of the apportionment. So cod doing pretty well, slight downtick in pollock for 2015.
I think that's it from the last region, unless there's any questions.
Ernie Weiss here in Anchorage. I did have a general question on the trawl data or economic data reporting. That's required of the vessel owner, is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
Okay, last chance for any questions for any of the group.
Hey, maybe you could ask them about how many observers they're going to have available right away.
Okay, well, thanks to everyone for joining us then. And thanks to Ernie for putting this together. I guess it's become sort of an annual event now, and I think it's a good thing. I wish other groups would do it. And if you have other folks that we should include next year, I would recommend getting the suggestions to Ernie. We invited Cindy this year from the EPA. That was Ernie's request, which I think it was great to have her on board. And so if there's anyone else that we ought to include, please let us know, because I think yes, we will continue doing this annually. I guess one last chance for any questions then.
Brent, here's a question. People are thinking the flights are all full. You're not going to be able to get any observers out anyway, so maybe that's kind of a moot point. But I did want to say thank you to you, Brent, and all the presenters, and I appreciate all the fishermen coming and they asking good questions. And this, you're right, this, I think this is pretty valuable. And wanted to say Merry Christmas to everybody. But thank you very much.
And this is Cindy Godsey. I just wanted to let you know that I sent out the link to the legislation that I've been tracking. And so hopefully you'll be able to track it too and know when this bill becomes a law.
Thanks, Cindy. And all this information that I get, I'm going to go ahead and post as quickly as I can to aebfish.org. So, again, thanks.
And Facebook.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Okay. Well, and yes, and thank you very much, everyone. And yes, happy holidays.
Thanks, Brent. Thank you, Brent.